because her work was blogged about in the New York Times. I am 100% certain that somewhere on this globe, somebody else is doing similar work that hasn't been blogged about, that our news Google alerts are not going to ping us to tell us it's out there. And if you know about that work, you got to share it with us.
This is Lee Hazelwood.
And Nancy Sinatra.
You know, some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna turn on
WGXC Macra, Hudson Catskill.
Hey, cowboy, where'd you get that funny hat?
90.7 FM.
If you like radio that painstakingly stitches together seemingly unalike music in delightfully unpredictable ways, then check out WGXC's Overlooked, the second and fourth Tuesday of each month, just after the new news. You'll hear underheard and overlooked music, ancient to future, from every corner of the Omniverse. That's Overlooked on 90.7 WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tammy Dillon of Germantown, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I was just going to lie down for 5 minutes, take a little nap.
Yeah, a regular Rip Van Winkle.
Who?
Another guy who took a little nap, woke up and didn't know where he was.
Juneteenth and July 4th highlight America's historic contradictions. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Two consecutive federal holidays, Juneteenth and Independence Day, highlight the sweep of American history, marking the birth of the nation on July 4th and on June 19th, the liberation of the last group of enslaved people in the United States at the end of a devastating civil war. Independence Day commemorates the day in 1776 when the text of the Declaration of Independence was agreed upon by the Continental Congress. Juneteenth is a compression of June 19th, the day in 1865 when enslaved people in Texas were finally freed with the arrival of the Union Army in Galveston, 2 months after the end of the Civil War and over 2 years after President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation. While these two holidays are celebratory, they afford an opportunity to reflect upon and hopefully to address this nation's crimes and contradictions. Take, for example, the most iconic statue in the United States, the Statue of Liberty. Formerly named Liberty Enlightening the World, the statue was a gift from France to the United States. The idea of the statue dates back to 1865.
Originally conceived by Edouard de Laboulaye, a French abolitionist who conceived of the idea of the Statue of Liberty and giving it to the United States as a gift, that it was originally conceived as an idea to celebrate the end of the Civil War and to celebrate abolition.
Clint Smith, author of How the Word is Passed, A Reckoning with the History of Slavery Across America, explained on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. He went on to describe a little-known feature of the statue, her shackles.
The original conception of the statue actually had Lady Liberty breaking shackles, like a pair of broken shackles on her wrists to symbolize the end of slavery. And over time, it became very clear that that would not have the sort of wide stream or wide mainstream support of people across the country. Obviously, this having been just not too long after the end of the Civil War, so there were still a lot of fresh wounds. And so they shifted the meaning of the statue to be more about a sort of inclusivity, more about the American experience, the American project, the American promise, the promise of democracy, and sort of obfuscated the original meaning to the point where even the design changed. And so they replaced the shackles with a tablet and the torch, and then put the shackles very subtly, sort of underneath her robe. And you can but the only way you can see them, these broken chains, these broken links, are from a helicopter or from an airplane.
The statue sits atop a massive pedestal, blocking the view of Lady Liberty's feet to pedestrians below. The statue was to be unveiled in 1876 for the U.S. centennial, but construction was delayed. By the October 28, 1886 unveiling, much had changed from when de la Boulaye conceived of the statue in 1865. Yes, slavery had ended, but so had Reconstruction, the rebuilding of the war-torn South intended to empower the newly freed black population. Instead, the system of segregation and racist terror that would become known as Jim Crow was being instituted. Meanwhile, women were still excluded from most aspects of economic and political life. The New York City Woman Suffrage Association rented a steamer to protest Lady Liberty's unveiling, calling the use of the female form in a country where they had no political rights, quote, a gigantic lie, a travesty, and a mockery, unquote. Their protest disrupted the unveiling, including a keynote address by politician and businessman Chauncey Depew. His speech promoted democratic ideals, but also denounced, quote, anarchists and bombs, and declared, quote, those who come to disturb our peace and dethrone our laws are aliens and enemies forever, unquote. The statue's unveiling occurred just over 5 months after the Haymarket incident in Chicago, when a rally for the 8-hour workday was disrupted by a bomb. The blast and subsequent police gunfire killed 7 police officers and at least 4 civilians, injuring many more. Several key Chicago labor movement leaders were tried and executed following the massacre, ushering in an era of violence against labor organizing that would last decades. The history of social progress in the United States is complex, interwoven, and often bloody.
We don't fully understand and account for this history that actually wasn't that long ago, that in the scope of human history was only just yesterday, then we won't fully understand how our contemporary landscape of inequality today, we won't understand how slavery shaped the political, economic, and social infrastructure of this country.
It was Emma Lazarus's poem New Colossus, commissioned by Joseph Pulitzer to raise funds for the statue's pedestal, that forever linked Lady Liberty to immigration, with the line, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, unquote. For many of the 12 million immigrants arriving at Ellis Island from 1892 to 1954, the statue was their first sight of their new home. Now in 2024, the state of Texas, the first state to institute Juneteenth as a holiday, has deployed its National Guard and other armed agents to deter and deport asylum seekers at the U.S.-Mexico border. And President Biden has joined the anti-immigrant fervor, shutting down the border to asylum seekers. If Lady Liberty, torch in hand and broken shackles at her feet, could shed tears, she'd be doing so now. Tears of sorrow, yes, but also tears of joy for the movements fighting for liberty, enlightening the world. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves.
WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Accra, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
All the candlelights, this is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing a part. We know every card by heart. All the candlelights, this is it. We'll hit the heights, and oh, what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
You gotta try something.
You got a job at the radio station?
Oh, great, that place. It's dark and dirty and has, like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
The satellite is plain, twisted in a grain. Sundays on the canyon floor. But I can hear you loud and clear through the static and the beam. And the squelch is music all the way. This howler divine is Broad Street hollow rhymes, crazed up.
Party come as a whole. Nathan McLaughlin, Camp Hill Hudson Radio Group. Good morning, WGXC listeners, and welcome to Live by Life program. I'm Kelly, a member of the Camp Hill Hudson Media Group, and my other colleagues in the studio with me are Kim and Lori and Michael. Today, we have a special guest.
Nathan McLaughlin lives and works in Hudson, New York. He is a musician and artist, as well as former executive director of the Camp Hill Hudson community. Nathan's musical focus is on the intersection of acoustic and electronic instruments, the human being and going to the center. He is also a community member of Camp Hill. Welcome.
Welcome. Hi, Nathan.
Hello.
This is Michael and Lori. Say hello.
Hello, Nathan.
Hey, Lori. Hey, thanks, everybody, for having me.
Nice to have you in the studio here, and Tom's in the background. So we're going to get right to it, and Lori and I want to ask you this question. So, Lori, you want to ask Nathan, where were you born?
I was born in Florida with my father. It was nice down there.
And you're a special guest today, host. Yeah.
Host.
Shall we ask Nathan where he was born?
Yeah.
Let's ask him. You want to ask him?
Where you've been born, Nathan?
Yeah. I was born in a town called Haverty Grace in Maryland.
And where did you grow up?
Yeah, and I grew up in the town across the river from that, in a town called Perryville, Maryland, which is kind of at the top of the Chesapeake Bay.
That's far.
Maryland.
That's far?
Is it far? It's like 4 hours from here. It's not that far.
Yeah, and we are in the Hudson studio here, by the way, just so people know. So, yeah, not too far, but far enough.
Far enough.
Yeah.
That's Kelly.
Tell us about your family and childhood, and tell us how you met your wife.
Okay. My childhood was spent in the forest a lot, kind of lived in a very rural area, had access to a lot of forest, so that's where I spent a lot of my time.
In Maryland.
And spent a lot of time there. Where I grew up, there weren't a lot of kids on the road or anything, on the streets. It was pretty rural, so... Spent a lot of time in the woods hanging out and getting to learn about nature. Pretty musical household. My mom and sister were playing music in the house a lot, but I didn't play music as a kid, really. I didn't really start playing that until college, which is where I met my wife, Maria, you asked about. I met my wife, Maria, in York, Pennsylvania, York College, which is where we were going.
York College, and that gets actually to the next question. Tell us about college and what your major was. And what did you do after you graduated?
It's kind of funny to talk about it because I have a degree in marketing, which is a funny thing, cause it's not like I do corporate marketing or something.
Yeah.
but that's what I have a degree in. I have a minor in music industry. And I was really thinking to go work for record labels after college. And I did some of that in college. I worked for Madonna's label, Maverick, and I worked for some punk rock labels.
Okay.
Hellcat Records, some others.
You have any interesting stories from that time, working for that record company?
I mean, it was cool. You know, I would get packages in the mail, and my job was to go around to all the record stores and promote shows and promote albums. So I would get to go see shows. I would get to go backstage, meet bands. I think the big band at the time on Maverick was Muse, a band called Muse. So okay. I got to go see Muse. When I was doing that for Hellcat Records, I got to go to a lot of cool shows, meet a lot of cool punk bands back then. Not really any great stories, though, honestly. It was kind of... anticlimactic doing that work. You would think it sounds a lot more glamorous than it was. It wasn't that.
Like most jobs.
Yeah, like most jobs. So I didn't end up doing that. And I started, I graduated and started doing this work where I was doing job training for inner city youth. And did that for a couple years. But at the time, my wife was already in Camp Hill. and I was just increasingly intrigued by what was going on there. That was at Beaver Run. Laura, you know about Beaver Run.
Right.
You were a student there a long time ago. So I went to Beaver Run to be a teacher's aide, and that's where I first met Camp Hill and anthroposophical music.
Yeah. That's well, good. You're kind of one step ahead of our questions, because Kim was going to ask what you just mentioned, yeah? Which was, how did you...
Tell us how you got involved in the Camp Hill organization and where it took your life.
Yeah.
Maybe to reiterate, do you remember the specific moment where, like, you really... It was like, oh, this is a Camp Hill or...
I do.
Yeah.
I had been, you know, going out there because my wife was in seminar. They call it the Academy now.
Yeah.
And so I would go there for... presentations or different little events. I didn't really have a concept of what that was.
Yeah. This is in Pennsylvania, like 50 miles west of Philly.
Yeah. Chester County. Yeah. You know, and it can be hard to really understand what's going on there other than it's like beautiful and the people are really interesting and mm-hmm. all of those things. I was becoming kind of increasingly frustrated in my work because it was a nonprofit owned for-profit company, and there were just a lot of ethical dilemmas happening there.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember saying to my wife, like, you know, I don't care what they need. Like, I would go be the janitor, which is actually, that's still a job I think about going to do because I like to do that. But they didn't need a janitor. They had that. They needed a one-on-one classroom aide. So I said, yeah, I'll do that. So this is a fun story because I went out. They were like, yeah, maybe you could come have an interview. And coming from the business world, I thought, oh, okay, I know what an interview is. it's not what that was. I met with this guy, Bernie.
Yeah.
For folks that know, Bernie has this amazing long beard and just, oh, he's always wearing a flannel shirt. So I meet up with Bernie and we go on this little walk and he has this little note card, like an index card in his pocket. And he keeps pulling that out because it has information on it, I guess he wants to ask me about. And we're just, you know, so it's this sort of interview. But then he's like, okay, I need you to go up to the schoolhouse and meet this teacher. That's who you would be maybe working with. Mm-hmm. I want you to go meet her. And I thought, well, that's strange. Like, I don't know her at all. I only know, like, three people there. Like, how? What am I going to do? But what he was trying to do, I think, was see if I could, like, navigate a social situation. Go up there and introduce myself and kind of just navigate that, which I did. And then the teacher did something like that to me as well. I'm in the classroom just kind of observing, and then it's time for recess. So we go to the playground, and there's this young man, and I could tell that she, like, put me out there without any instruction to see if I could kind of immerse myself in that. And I really wanted to do this. So for people that know me, that's not really my personality, but I did that, ended up, I got that job and I went there and thus began, and not to be overly dramatic, but it's true, a sort of like life-changing year and a life-changing experience that changed the whole trajectory of my life to such an extreme that I thought I'll never go work in an office again. Yeah.
Kelly.
Yeah,
Kelly,
sir. Yeah. Yay to no office.
Yeah. Well, that didn't last. That's another story. Kelly. But the thing about it, and it's different. What changes people is different for each person, obviously, when they go to Camp Hill. But for me, it was so enjoyable to be relieved of myself. Mm. I had to give myself over because these were like really intense classroom situations I'm in. So all day long, I have no choice but to be fully in it and in service. And I found that liberating. It's stressful, but I also found that it changed really who I was drastically.
Do you remember how old you were, if you don't mind sharing, when you had that initial interview?
26. I'm 43.
Yeah. 43. Yeah, and that whole how Bernie and the teacher, that's kind of the Camp Hill way, right? It's kind of like, and let's see who you are.
I liked that so much that I did that to countless people. in Camp Hill in all the years since. For folks at Camp Hill Hudson, if you remember me ever sending random people into tea break without me there, that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
I'd be like, the tea break's, you know, a couple floors down. And if the person could do that, and then I would come down maybe 15 minutes later and see if they had kind of settled into that, then they're good to go. Or if we didn't have the time, I'd be like, I want you to come back on Wednesday at 10 a.m. And if they did that, showed up and did all of that on their own, then they're good to go. And you're working with someone who successfully navigated that. That's Svetlana. She did that.
Okay.
And I remember coming down and seeing, yay, Svetlana, seeing her in the tea break. And I thought, well, she belongs.
It's also very minimal. It's not very taxing. It's just like, it's like so much less, oh, I have to do this to help them, whereas actually you do the opposite.
That's right. And that's an important lesson for people to learn kind of up front. Helping someone is a bonus to being with them on their journey. Mm-hmm. And I found that a lot of my days at Beaver Run were spent just walking alongside someone on their journey. Someone's having a tough day in class. They send me, because I'm the classroom aide, out onto this trail system. I spent hours and hours on this trail system. You know, So I'm just alongside them while they're having their bad day, and that's an honor and a joy, really. Yeah.
Being there.
The only time it was nerve-wracking was when Maria was pregnant. So she was very pregnant, and I was so worried because I didn't really carry a cell phone or anything at the time. I had to go get a cell phone just in case I'm in the woods and she goes into labor.
Oh, okay.
I would need to get
be
back.
Alerted.
She was in the schoolhouse, but still, I'd want to get back there, because otherwise I could be out for hours, mm-hmm. you know, without a phone or anyone really knowing where I am.
Did you get notified while you were?
No, she worked in the classroom until the bitter end. I mean, she was so pregnant in that classroom because she was working.
Oh,
she was a teacher.
Yeah, because your first son was born in June.
Yeah.
So she made it through the school year and then...
Yep, by like a week.
Gave birth on her own birthday.
gave birth on her birthday, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What a gift that must have been.
I know.
As much as I'd love to keep picking your brain about that, I think we should go to the next question. Kim, do you see... you want to...
How long have you lived in Columbia County and what brought you and your family here?
Sure. So I've been in Columbia County, it'll be 11 years in May, which for me is like a record to be in one place. Camp Hill brought me here. I was in Camp Hill, Minnesota with my family before I came here. And I came here because I started doing the outreach work on behalf of Camp Hill and needed to be in a more centrally located place. So I came to Hudson because Camp Hill Hudson had just bought Solaris. And it was almost an empty building, as I'm sure Michael remembers and Lori remembers, because Lori, you were already there. And they had an office, and so there I am back in the darn office, you know, after all those years of thinking I'm done with the office, there I am.
But it was in a different way, though. Being directly involved on the ground, so to speak, especially with children at Beaver Run, which is very intense. I mean, I was at Triform, and that was intense enough. But but you had that sort of direct connection still, even though...
Absolutely, yeah. You know. Yeah, and, you know, we had been life-sharing and house parenting in Minnesota.
So Lori and I want to ask you this question. Yeah, so you kind of, well, you didn't quite allude to it, but let's ask him, how did you join Camp Hill Hudson?
How did you join Hudson?
Well, you know, if for anyone that's spent time around Camp Hill Hudson, it's hard not to join Camp Hill Hudson. And I was just talking to Maria, you can ring the bell, because it's very true.
I didn't want to overkill it, but yeah. Yay. How could you not want to join? We love that.
Well, I was talking to my wife the other day, because in the mission statement of Camp Hill Hudson is play. Playing is part of the mission, which is the only Camp Hill that I'm aware of that has that in their stated mission. And it's a joyous place to be. And, you know, I had my office right there, right in the middle of everything. So, I mean, I got kind of wrapped into it pretty quickly, probably within that first year, because it's a wonderful thing to do. At the time, I was traveling a lot, so I probably missed a lot of things. But and then as time was going on, I joined some different working groups in Camp Hill Hudson. I joined the finance group, and I joined the core group. And I don't know if Cam will hear this. Cam was the director before I was, who essentially convinced me that I should I should take over her role as the executive director. And, it, you know, to be honest, it took some convincing because it's a hard job.
Yes, so I hear. We laud you for it.
So, yeah, it did take a little while for me to make that leap. Just because of I knew kind of the level of commitment there, but you know, it was the decision wasn't about me; it was about all of you. So,
yeah, to be of service. So it kind of came back in a different way. Yeah, after having that on the playground and
There's a Carl Koenig quote. Carl Koenig was the founder of Camp Hill. And Michael's heard me read this quote many times. I won't read the whole thing. I'll paraphrase it, which Carl Koenig talked about being a servant more than a leader.
Yeah.
And to be a monk-like approach to that, have a monk-like approach to that. And I really tried to, and still do, try to live that.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't read that verse in a while. That makes me want to go grab it again. Yeah. Be more of a servant than a leader. And that gets back to the side-by-side kind of what you mentioned before, with those walks with the and, individuals you were helping.
And to be a listener.
You know, to be a listener.
More than someone who's ordering people. You're keeping order more than you're ordering.
Yeah, and that's a fascinating thing, because if you're the ED, it's executive kind of is action.
Yeah.
And yet you have to listen to when you need to take action. So
you're carrying out the action that's the will of the people that are around you. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned music a little bit earlier, but we want to know how you... You did mention how you got into playing music later, but what was your kind of first memory of really saying, wow, I really am taking to the guitar, which is your primary instrument, right? Like, do you have a specific moment where you're like, I think I really want to do this, and how would you describe the music you play?
Yeah, so it was some years of playing music as like a keyboard player before I picked up the guitar, and it was really because I was playing music with this guitarist. His name's Chris Monahan. Wonderful guitar player. And I don't know, like his approach to that instrument and his tone just made me really want to play guitar. But that was like 2-3 years into playing together. So I didn't start playing guitar till I was 23. Because I had moved into this apartment that kind of had a kind of rehearsal space that just had a lot of instruments around. So I was really fortunate I could pick up any of them and play the guitar, which became like a real passion for me. The music I'm playing these days is primarily based on the Rudolf Steiner's planetary scales, and I'll play some of those for you in a bit. So there is acoustic music in that, which is all I brought today. There's electronic elements to that as well. Because there's like a duality to, I guess, the music I play that can be very earthy and acoustic and then also very kind of electronic or experimental, which is actually how I first learned about WGXC and Wave Farm and all the cool stuff that goes on there.
Yeah, and we're going to have you play a song from one of your albums from the Planetary Scales in a minute. But I think also the first time... I think you were not the ED yet, but I remember my first real impression memory of you is when you and others, sound makers, had some event at Olana that was like using the elements of nature that you would find on Olana and just making sounds. I don't know if I would even say music, but soundscapes, Mike. Yeah. And I remember seeing you and others, and you were, you know, using the leaf and so on. And so it might have looked ridiculous. I love the juxtaposition of how serious, not serious, but how reverent. And I'm always someone that goes between being reverent and sort of a little bit silly. But I mentioned to you afterward, I said, you know, it sounds like you all are trying to, like, tap into, like, the Andy Goldsworthy version of sound.
Yeah.
And you said, yeah. You were, like, very emphatic, like, yeah, that's it. And
that is it.
And yeah. I wonder, yeah, if the song you're going to play kind of comes out of this, just coming from the elements, you said earthiness and yet electronic and... Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of that fundraiser you used to have there at Alana. Do you remember that?
What's the name? Woodshed? I don't remember.
I don't remember. But it was a Wave Farm event.
A Wave Farm.
It was, yeah, WGXC fundraiser event. And we were performing as part of the John Cage Trust. Mm. So there is this sort of serious academic element to that. We were performing a John Cage piece called Branches. Mm-hmm. So there's the serious academic element, and then there's the the fun element of that. And that, yeah, is definitely, I relate to that well. And, you know, being a woodsy guy.
Hello.
playing that there was really special, because you have to acquire the bulk of the instrumentation from the surrounding area. You bring you bring a cactus.
True.
You bring a cactus?
You bring one.
A cactus.
That's indicated in the composition. But
okay.
Yeah.
In the John Cage?
Yes.
Okay.
And the durations are calculated ahead of time that we each play. So it's all very intentional. We're timing each other and stuff.
I see.
But the instrumentation is fun because you go collect it.
Yeah.
And there are certain pieces that he wanted you to have, and then there's others you can... Yeah.
Yeah, they should do another one of those. But in the meantime, you do have your guitar right here in the studio.
Yeah.
Tell us, and I mean, by the way, you have several albums, and I kind of took a peek on Bandcamp and I think Spotify. But what's this album and, the song?
Yeah, I'll play for you. It's Thursday, so we'll play Jupiter. Jupiter is the planet of the day. So this is, I'll play an acoustic version of Jupiter, and I'll also do a little kind of Jupiter improvisation in there as well. The first part of this piece you can hear on the Bandcamp release, the Planetary Music series, which features these recordings for Jupiter feature my buddy Dan Pell, who I want to mention briefly because Dan just had a radio performance go live yesterday on XPN. So if folks are into this, they should go listen to Dan Pell.
Very good.
Yeah. That's good to see.
So you'll get the guitar ready. And also, there's beautiful artwork on this planetary scales. When you go to the Bandcamp, you'll see
there is. I should have mentioned that. The artwork for that series is by this artist, Lena Algahov, really talented art therapist.
Okay, so here it is, Jupiter.
That's Nathan.
Thank you.
like him, Nathan.
Thank you.
A good voice.
That was really nice.
Thank you.
Do the other songs complement, or do they kind of, meaning from the Planetary Scales album, do they kind of speak to each other, or is one going to the next?
Yeah.
How would you describe that?
You know, if you wanted to kind of have an experience of those, you should listen to them on the day, right?
What?
Moon on Monday, Mars on Tuesday. That's a fun experience and something I do sometimes where I'll play them for myself. One a day. Listening to them all back to back can be kind of a funny experience because they aren't they don't relate to the energy of the day very well.
Yeah,
you know, if you do that, you could do that though. In terms of do they speak to one another? Not only if the planets are meant to speak to one another. You know, the sun doesn't really do that at all. You know.
Yeah, that's more of a celestial being
right.
than a planet.
Yeah.
Whereas the moon is a reflection.
Yeah.
Or reflects all the energy in the universe. The Mars wants to talk to everybody.
Yeah. That's funny because I was born on a Monday and I feel like I reflect. People tell me I do very good imitations, or Jody does. Get born on a Monday and you can reflect. So
yeah.
What day was everybody born on? Do you know?
I don't know that.
You don't know what day? How about you, Kim? Do you know what day you were born?
I was born at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday.
Uh-huh. Tuesday.
Yeah, some Mars.
You have a bit of fire in you, yeah? What about Kelly?
She's wearing red. She's wearing red.
Yeah. Yeah, Kelly, what day of the week were you born?
I can't remember that far back.
Well,
that's a good answer.
Here's to not remembering when the day you were born. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually, it was December 11th, 1976, but I forget the actual day and time. Mm.
I've heard you play this play the music in other spaces and heard it online. I enjoy it. I recommend people go and see it. I'm going to actually skip to another question, though, because it relates. You have an upcoming music event. Yeah. Do you want to put a plug in?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a great monthly series at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill called the Sunday Night Swim. And I'm going to play for the first time live, I think. I'm going to play Venus. I don't usually get to play Venus because Venus is Friday.
Yeah.
And during Holy Week, we don't play music on Friday.
Yeah, because so it's silent.
It's silent. So I've never played Venus for people. And this is like a 40-minute version of Venus.
I don't see that on the question sheet about what you're asking them.
We've got a cheat sheet here, listeners, by the way. We're jumping around. I wonder here. Let's see. Do you want to ask your question, Kelly, about the CREATE organization?
Oh, come on.
You were real keen to ask him about that, and that, yeah.
Tell us about the CREATE organization and how you got involved in it.
CREATE. Yeah, CREATE's the Arts Council for Greene, Columbia, Schoharie Counties, and I was their interim director after I left Camp Hill, and I'm still involved in that org because I think they do cool things. They primarily provide grants to artists and also are a community-based art gallery. Just had a really cool show open recently there, a women's show. And they have a children's show coming up, I think. I'm not the one to plug CREATE, really, but it's a cool organization. And the reason how I got involved there, I think, or what drew me in there was people being involved there that I did and thought mm-hmm. would be fun to work with, and I was right. And it's a great, great place.
Yeah, and it's is a Catskill base, Greene County base.
It is the gallery's in Catskill, but they provide Arts Council services to three counties. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think they're doing great work, and it's local. So and they Camp Hill Hudson was got a grant.
You're
from
a grantee.
Them, so,
yeah.
I wanted to ask you something about, and so. We're on the last page, Kim. I actually wanted, and in different ways you alluded to, you know, the earthy and the electronic. Oh, yeah. But technology, you and I have had one-on-one conversations about how we as human beings engage in it, either consciously or unconsciously, and we were even part of a wider group conversation recently where this example was given about, you know, most tools that we as human beings use, it's kind of something that isn't necessarily attached to our body, and that we, you know, if we have a, we have to, we need to get a hammer, nail this nail in the wall, we pick it up, we use it, and then when we're done, we put it away, and it's left there. You know, we have utilized the tool.
Yeah.
And I know you're kind of one that is an advocate of being consciously engaging with the technology, I think is a fair way of how you said it. But the aspect of the cell phone in particular is that we can sometimes be, instead of using the cell phone as a tool, the cell phone can maybe turn the table and use us. And
it does that.
That the cell phone's picking us up.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the constant notification dictates to us what we engage in rather than us using it for what we need. And so I'm just wondering if you can talk about that phenomenon. And
well, how much time do we have?
Yeah. I would say 2 minutes.
Oh, 2 minutes.
But you feel that this isn't talked about in wider circles.
It's delicate in the music world, I think, because I don't want to come across kind of critical of other people's creative practices or anything. I do think it's important to use those tools intentionally. I love technology, and I make a lot of electronic-based music. They are tools to me. There are elements of that I'm really cautious about for myself, which is I'm cautious to not acquire a piece of equipment so that I can go perform or record and sound like that piece of equipment, and that's very easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Very easy hole to fall into. I only want a tool if it fits into my kind of creative process or the workflow that I have. The other thing that's important to me is to always have a human compositional element.
Yeah.
Generative music is really popular in the electronic world right now. There is a generative element to what I'm doing with electronic music, but it's only an element, and it has to be, in my work, met with like human composition.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in, you guys must have read it from Bandcamp or somewhere. I'm interested in that intersection. I think that's interesting. I also believe, which is a little bit of paraphrasing Rudolf Steiner, that if we do not engage with it and act with it intentionally, it will carry on without us and do things that maybe we don't want it to do. And in the creative world, I think that's just so incredibly easy. There's questions that are always arising for me about what is it am I harnessing and what is it that I'm doing with all of that and where am I in that, and that's just the journey I'm on. I find all that really interesting. Cell phones are a whole other addiction.
Yeah, it does get into an addiction, but it was an example that I think most people can relate to in terms of a broader conversation. I think, what am I harnessing as it relates to technology? Is that a good way to, a broader way for us to just be like when we're engaged with whatever technological
devices? Am I harnessing something of my own creation, or am I amplifying something of artificial creation? And I'm personally not that interested in that for myself. I don't mind going and hearing other people do it, but it's not necessarily my own creative pursuit.
We'll have to leave it at that because we have a couple, but thank you. We have Lori, shall we ask him? Tell us about your new job, your upcoming job. You want to ask him?
What kind of job do you do, Nathan?
Your new job.
So next week I start a new job at an organization called the Healthcare Consortium, which is right down the street here, right around the corner.
Healthcare Consortium right here in Hudson.
Another great org that is part of like a rural health network and helps provide access to healthcare for people.
So you're looking forward to that?
I am really excited about it.
good luck to you on that.
Good luck.
And then Kim has a, we have two questions left here, Kim and Kelly. Yeah.
Do you have any hobbies, and what do you do in your spare time?
Hobby. I mean, music's definitely a big hobby of mine, and that's I devote a lot of my free time to that. I raised two boys, so that also consumes a lot of my time. They're 12 and 15. Collect records, listen to records.
We love records.
Yeah, I do a lot of that. Go to Spikes in Catskill for fun, and do a lot with that. I used to do a lot of hiking. I don't really do a lot of that anymore. Maybe I've spent enough time in the woods. Maybe
hiking.
I would love to join you side by side.
Maybe I've had it.
Maybe we can find some objects too that can be sound.
We could go perform branches together down at High Falls or something.
Oh, yes. How about that, could. Everybody? Shall we perform branches, Kelly?
You need only three people. You need three people.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a trio performing for branches.
Oh, so it sounds like you've done this before.
I've done it before.
Oh, my God. Branches. Okay.
Branches.
Well, we won't keep at...
No.
You shouldn't try this at home, right? That's not... for the
you
listeners.
Can. No, you should.
You can do three branches at home.
You need two friends.
The two friends. Yeah. Okay. I'll take you up on that.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice on how to lead a good life?
Oh, that's a good, great question, Kelly. Did you write that question? It's really good.
That is a good one.
You know, I give this advice to my children a lot, is that you have to do things that bring you joy. That the pursuit of happiness, and Michael knows this from Carla Pietzner. Finding joy is more powerful to me than trying to look after happiness. So I try to do things and surround myself by people that bring me joy.
That sounds...
And what is the song we usually sing? I'm not going to try to sing it now, but we've got joy down in our hearts. Deep, deep down in our hearts.
Yep.
J-O-Y, down in our hearts.
Kelly's
not wanting to sing.
I don't want to sing it. We need Nicholas for that one, yeah, Kelly. Nobody sings that like Nicholas.
Finding joy.
Joy. Yeah.
Well, it's been a joy chatting with you and hearing you play. So thank you, Nathan.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. It was
and
awesome.
This was Live by Life with the Camp Hill Hudson Radio Group on WGXC 90.7 FM.
That's it.
For some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Mark's greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11.
Some restrictions apply.
Radio and TV do a lot for me. Lots of times I date my honey when I'm running short of folding money, and the radio and TV are free. Outdoor movie, everything is groovy, but at times I like it better just to bring my baby home and set her at the radio and TV with me. It's nice to sit and say the things that lovers have to say, while the good guys chase the bad guys, and the top 10 records play.
car keys. Take away my water skis. Take away my folding money. Take it all, but just don't take my honey or my radio and TV from me. It's nice to sit and say the things that lovers have to say while the good guys chase the bad guys and the top ten records play. Take away my car keys. Take away my water skis. Take away my folding money. Take it all, but just don't take my honey or my radio and TV from me.
Hey man, I saw your Volkswagen thing from across the street while I was getting a rhubarb smoothie. Oh yeah, these smoothies are great. They're loaded with important phytochemicals to combat the free radicals floating around in your body, causing you to make bad decisions, like buying that Volkswagen thing. Oh, good burn, man. You seem really cool. Yeah, I guess you could say I've been dulling the cutting edge for years. So I was wondering if you could tell me where the raddest swimming spots are. Me and my girlfriend Olestra burning up in this man-made heat dome. Oh, rad, man. Yeah, me and my girlfriend Topiary, we're just gonna head over there. Oh, snap, my man. What are the GPs? That's like a way of saying GPS without really saying it. Well, we could tell you the DDs, but then we would have to kill.